17 years old. It's a great time to fall in love and figure out what you want to do with your life. That's what happened to Mary Johnson one day as she was walking past her high school library.
And in the window, there was a cover of Time magazine. And the eyes of this woman on the cover just kind of drew me in. And the bell was ringing for my French class. I didn't pay any attention. I just walked right into the library, took the magazine off the shelf, and started reading about Mother Teresa.
It was her image on the cover.
It was Mother Teresa's image on the cover. And as I read the article about how Mother Teresa was taking the poor off the streets of Calcutta, finding babies in dustbins, taking people who were dying and caring for them, somehow I just kind of knew that's what I had to do.
Mary Johnson did join Mother Teresa's order. She spent almost half her life as a sister in the Missionaries of Charity, and she writes about it in her new book, An Unquenchable Thirst, Following Mother Teresa in Search of Love, Service, and an Authentic Life. Mary Johnson lives in Nashua, New Hampshire now. Welcome to Radio Boston.
It's great to be here, Meghna. Thank you.
So you saw that picture of Mother Teresa in Time magazine when you were just 17, and 2 years later, you ended up joining the Missionaries of Charity at a convent in New York, in the South Bronx.
To the South Bronx in the late 70s, which was a really tough place. The gunfights on the streets and the drug deals on every corner, it was a really tough place at that time.
Take us inside as you first stepped in. What was the place like?
It was about three stories, and not extremely large, and very, very simply furnished. The sisters really lived a very poor life. The idea was to live like the poor that we were serving. And so the chapel was a room pretty bare. We knelt on carpets on the floor. We didn't have any seats. And the dormitories were just big rooms with beds inside. That was the only thing inside the dormitory. There weren't any divisions between the beds. We just had beds, no night table, nothing. There was a shelf outside in the hall where you'd keep your clothes. We just lived a really very poor, very simple life.
I get the sense that even from that first day, it was apparent to you that Mother Teresa's teachings, her way of living, informed every single aspect of life
in the convent. You're right. From the time we got up at 4:40 in the morning until we went to bed at 10 o'clock at night, every minute of the day was scheduled. We had four and a half hours of prayer every day. We had more than 8 hours of work with the poor. We would have 1 hour of free time once a week, and sometimes we didn't even quite manage that. It was a life of total devotion that way, that every minute was consecrated to the service of God and to the poor. The way we did things.
Did you feel that, though, when you were in the South Bronx, that your actions were in service to the poor, or did you feel that they were in service to Mother Teresa's ideal form of living?
We always had to do things the Missionary of Charity way. Mother Teresa told us when we joined, she said, stay and be faithful for life or pack your bags and go home right now. She demanded that sort of adherence into community.
I wonder if we can explore a little bit further your journey towards living this life, because there's a wonderful section in the book where you describe how it's late at night, well, after 9 o'clock, and after 9 o'clock, the sisters didn't speak.
That's correct. After night prayer, we had a period of grand silence until the next morning after breakfast.
And there's a memory that you recall when you were taking a shower.
Yes. So that particular night, I went into the bathing room. We didn't use electricity after night prayer either, so no speaking and no electricity. We had these little candles that were kind of leftover stubs from the altar that we would use so that we could see at night. The candle was burning in the corner, and I had my shower. The water was cold, and I couldn't even open the door all the way because my aspirant mistress was standing right there in the doorway, and she was obviously very angry, and she looked at me and she spoke, which was already something very significant because it was after night prayer. We weren't supposed to speak. And she said, you took a shower. You're not supposed to take a shower. What are you doing? And she had a whole slew of adjectives for me. I think she called me vain, lazy, immodest, all these things. And I was completely baffled why on earth she was you know, so upset and why she was saying this. And I came out. And the next morning, I found one of the other sisters, and she explained to me that we were supposed to take a bath at night, just filling up our bucket with water and pouring the water over our heads with the little tin can that was there in the bathroom.
So your infraction was that you actually just used the shower rather than filling up a bucket.
Exactly.
Now, the next morning afterwards, when you asked another sister, why was it that you were so severely reprimanded for having used the shower head, you write that you reached out and squeezed her hand to say thank you.
I did, and that was really against the rules. We weren't supposed to touch anyone, especially not the sisters. We could touch someone, for example, in service to the poor, if we had to give someone a bath, if we had to, whatever. But Mother Teresa used to tell us that even if we were taking care of the babies, not to hold them any longer than was necessary, and never to touch a sister. And I think that was...
What was the reasoning for that? Why did she say that?
It was an extreme way that Mother Teresa understood the vow of chastity. She used to tell us, we are only always all for Jesus. And she used to extend that to the fact that we wouldn't touch each other, that we wouldn't have special friends among the sisters. We were supposed to treat everybody the same. We were never supposed to get too close to anybody. We were never supposed to act on any sort of, you know, just natural, oh, I'd like to get to know that person a little better. I'd like to be friends. I'd like to get close. And eventually that also became really hard for me.
In those first 6 months, you actually met Mother Teresa.
I did, yes.
She came to the South Bronx.
She came to the South Bronx. She was there for about 10 days, and it was just a wonderful thing. I remember how she came in the door at the South Bronx, went straight into the chapel, was so focused, and then came out and came into the refectory and had dinner with us, and I had cooked that day, and I was just watching to see, will she like my soup? And just to see her talking and sharing like anybody else, it was nice.
My guest is Mary Johnson. For 20 years, she was a nun in Mother Teresa's order, the Missionaries of Charity, and she writes about it in her new book, An Unquenchable Thirst. So after your time in the South Bronx, you actually did go to Rome. And this was a part of the book which I just found to be astounding, because one thing in particular was you spoke with a woman named Sister Alberta, and through her you learn about something called the discipline.
Yes, so the sisters had a small rope whip with which they would beat themselves every night. The idea was that we were to share the sufferings of Jesus, and that would be a way also of sharing the sufferings of the poor and of making up for our sins and the sins of the world. Mother Teresa told us repeatedly, she would say, the discipline is optional, but optional means we choose to do it.
It used a rope?
Basically, the way to describe it, I think, is a whip that was made of rope. We'd make them ourselves. There's a kind of a handle, and then five extensions with knots on them. So it was a significant amount of pain. It wasn't anything that drew blood. It was, you know, just, yeah.
Did you do it?
I did it.
When? Do you remember how old you were?
How old was I? I would have been 20 then. Yeah, I would have been 20. And then it continued that for 20 years, basically.
Every night?
Every night. There were a few exceptions, not on Sundays, not on special feast days, but basically every night.
Did you ever question the validity of Mother Teresa's logic in this? That to cause yourself pain brings you closer to understanding the sufferings of the poor?
For Mother Teresa, Jesus crucified was everything. As we came to know with the letters that were published 10 years after her death, she talks about this sense of being tortured in her soul. And eventually there was a priest who explained to her, Mother, this is not a sign that you're far from God. It's a sign you've come so close to God that you are sharing Jesus' suffering on the cross. I think that's kind of what formed Mother Teresa's spirituality, this idea, okay, so any trouble that I'm having, the doubts that I'm having, these feelings of agony, this is what's bringing me closer to Jesus, it's bringing me closer to the poor. And it was an unusual spirituality to me. It wasn't the way I was used to things. And eventually, for me, the resurrection somehow was more important, to pass through that suffering and to live in the resurrection.
But it sounds like that is also, I mean, you left the Missionaries of Charity, and that is also one of your most impassioned criticisms, if I can say, of her, of Mother Teresa, that she stopped at the suffering, that she couldn't get past suffering to these other aspects of what service might be?
Yes, I think that's true. I think that it was important, obviously, to feed the poor. It was important to someone who is hungry, someone who is not well clothed, someone who has no place to sleep for the night. You can't expect that person to begin to support themselves. You have to help them to get to that place. And that was enough for her. But in the end, it wasn't enough for me.
I wonder if we could talk a little bit more about what was happening with you.
Yeah.
Over the period of the 20 years that you were a sister in the Missionaries of Charity. Because you write very frankly about the fact that you needed to seek comfort in other people. I mean, we spoke a little earlier about how one of the rules was no touching between the sisters, and yet you went farther than that. I mean, you write about relationships you had.
Yes, I do write about relationships. I think it's very important that people start, especially, you know, in the Catholic Church, to speak honestly about the need for human connection and what that means for people. But I did develop a relationship with one of the sisters that definitely crossed the lines, went far beyond the you shall not touch rule. Eventually I get close to a priest as well. And I really did need...
Just to be clear, these were physical... intimate relationships.
The one with the sister went farther than the one with the priest as far as the physical things go. But yes, there was that component. Definitely there was a physical attraction. Especially when you're living a life of service and of this total dedication, of where you really have no way to find comfort in anything but prayer and the company of your sisters. It can be a very lonely life, especially if you're not supposed to make friends. And eventually I realized that I needed a closer relationship with someone.
Now, you said something very interesting, that you feel like the Catholic Church needs to be more honest about what people need in terms of physical and emotional connection.
We have these vows of celibacy, these vows of chastity, but they're very often not kept. The studies that have been done show that at any given time, only about 50% of the priests who are vowed to celibacy are actually observing it. So why aren't we considering things like the married clergy when these needs are so obviously there? And if you just hide behind it, you're not willing to talk about it, but you're pursuing these relationships in secret, you're living a double life in so many ways. It's just not good for anybody.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, as you well know, Mother Teresa is going down the path towards official canonization by the Vatican, official sainthood. Do you agree with that?
Well, I think that Mother Teresa wanted to be a saint. That was kind of very clear. She had always told us, she said, Mother made a promise. She used to speak of herself in the third person often. And she said, Mother made a promise to give saints to Mother Church. And she was talking that each one of us was meant to be a saint. I remember one day when we were in Rome, and Mother had been attending the Synod of Bishops as one of the only women invited to this meeting of bishops from throughout the world. And she came and she was having tea with us one day. And this was during the papacy of John Paul II. And she just stopped for a second and she said, you know, you all should hurry up and die. And we just kind of looked. Mother had never said anything like this before. And she said, yes, because the current pope is canonizing everybody. And it was really kind of, I think, at that moment that I realized, okay, so, because she wasn't just making a joke. It was really clear that there was part of her that really wanted to have a lot of Missionaries of Charity made canonized saints. And for me, that had never been a goal. To live a good, honest, loving life was important. To have that recognized in some sort of official way by the church really wasn't important for me.
Now, you spent, as you said, some 15 more plus years in Rome.
Yes.
Out of your 20 or so years total in the Missionaries of Charity. Does that mean that you were never assigned to Calcutta, to India?
That's correct. I have still now never been to India.
You've never been there. For people, especially for sisters who have dedicated their life to this form of service, as described and lived by Mother Teresa, if it becomes impossible to understand why without seeing and experiencing firsthand the level of suffering, the abject poverty and sickness and disease in Calcutta, for example, that it just doesn't make sense if you're living in Rome, in the opulence of Rome. But maybe if you had gone to India and had had a chance to be there at the sort of the nadir of human experience, maybe this brand of sacrifice would have made sense and you would have been able to stick with it.
It wasn't the physical hardships that were a reason that I left. In the beginning, it was the thing I noticed first because everything was so different. But it was the emotional deprivation, the not having the relationships, the never being able to come forward with your own ideas and to approach your work in a creative way. Those were the things that ultimately became so difficult that I began to feel as though I were suffocating. That ultimately proved far more difficult than the life of poverty.
Since then, you've gotten married.
Yeah.
You live in Nashua. Do you still consider yourself a Catholic?
I don't. No.
Do you consider yourself religious?
I don't consider myself a religious person.
Do you believe in God?
Not in the way that most people would conceive of God. Certainly not in the way that I did before. You know, there are a lot of mysteries in the world, a lot of things we don't understand. And we have these experiences sometimes of something larger than ourselves. These things happen, but we don't really know why. We cover that up a lot of times with this word God. And I think for me right now, that's kind of the way that I can live honestly in this world. Just kind of looking at the moment, not trying to add on any sort of explanation, interpretation, extra sort of story to go with my life, and just to live still out of a heart of love and of connection without the religion.
Mm. Well, Mary Johnson is author of An Unquenchable Thirst, Following Mother Teresa in Search of Love, Service, and an Authentic Life. Mary Johnson, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you, Meg. I've enjoyed it.
Find an excerpt of the book and photos from Mary's life while she was in the convent at radioboston.org.
Still to come on our program, our series New Hampshire Primary 101 kicks off with a story about a long-shot presidential candidate. Stay with us. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.